So I'm going to, in the 9 minutes that I have, take you through a little bit of the climate science. Now, frankly, just having heard from Hillary, there is absolutely nothing I can add. So that's going to be a very brief slide. Some of the COVID impacts, and then trying to perhaps pick up from where Hillary left off, but trying to look at the constructive actions that we can take both systemically and as individuals and in our community. So with the 2009 Victorian Bushfires Royal Commission, I was one of the three commissioners, and what was interesting at the time was that we had evidence provided to us from the CSIRO about the destructive impacts on the environment of human-induced global warming, at the time really relying on modelling. A decade later, with the devastating summer bushfires that we had 11 months ago, we've now got the evidence. And I won't go through all the evidence that Hillary's so eloquently just provided as well. Sadly, we still live amongst climate deniers, conspiracy theorists, and as well as short-term, self-interested nations who are slowing the progress that we could make. For example, retaining fossil fuels and stalling on infrastructure for electric cars and other means of moving us toward a much more sustainable future. But, so here we get the uptick, Biden and Kamala Harris have won the US election. And that is going to make a difference for Australia because they foreshadowed, and we'll see if it happens, that trade relationships will be impacted by countries that are not taking their part in climate action. So that could have a material impact on Australia. But we've seen with institutional investors, particularly the superannuation funds, they're not. It would be irresponsible for them to be investing in fossil fuels. Even this morning, looking at the next one, the doctors, there's a consortium of 29 health and medical practitioner peak bodies that have written to the federal government imploring the government to take further action on climate change in relation to people's health. Banks, we know, many of them, I think as recently as last week, the ANZ, announcing that it wouldn't be investing further in fossil fuels. The consumer demands are getting so much stronger. I think that's a very important factor. People are showing through the way they're spending that they want to have an impact they understand an impact with the dollars that they spend. And of course, increasingly companies are going to have to demonstrate environmental, social and governance credentials. The big professional member groups for directors, such as the Governance Institute of Australia, the Australian Institute of Company Directors, are publishing regularly on this now. And there's exposure for those entities themselves, but for their directors if they don't. We've got some fabulous research here in Australia. Ernst & Young did a piece of work for the World Wildlife Fund a few months ago, and more recently Deloitte, and they show the evidence that there are more jobs in a renewable recovery than fossil fuel. This very powerful stuff. So if we're wanting to do the right thing by the Australian community, that's where we move. Regionally, our Pacific neighbours are desperate because if their neighbours don't phase out fossil fuels, the rising sea levels will literally put their survival at risk. It's as drastic as that. So I think that what we need to in Australia is to be demonstrating that renewables are becoming much more affordable. We can do it as citizens, but we want action from the government as well. And then we've got the unlikely champions. Prince Charles has always been somewhat of a climate an environmental activist. Pope Francis, who's recently given a TED talk on his Laudato Si, but it was on the environment, as well as the youth activists such as Greta Thunberg, organisations like the Business Council of Australia, National Farmers Federation and so on. But we've got a huge amount of action. Now, Fiona showed the addition in 2013 of the purple and black. But just look at those across the BOM data of temperatures in Australia, and there are more to come. There's, if you need an evidence basis to what we're talking about, there's some of it. Very quickly, looking at some of the COVID impacts that we've seen in the last few months here in Australia and globally, most countries were unprepared. Many had health systems unable to cope with the volume of cases, and very sadly, we're seeing it recur in the Northern Hemisphere. In some countries, you'd have to say it's through a disregard for science. For others, the systems haven't been able to cope. But as we know, there's a differential impact on the poor, the vulnerable, homeless, disabled, and so on. Within Australia, we did pretty well, and already a couple of commentators have noted that. The formation of the National Cabinet, the narrative of protecting lives and livelihoods, hospitals and disability settings going immediately onto a crisis footing. We did see some uneven management within the states and territories, although I think everybody's got it now. But what we can see with today's news is that, sadly, even with the best systems in place, states like South Australia can have recurrence of COVID into the community. So it just shows that need for perennial vigilance. We've seen changes to the way we work, many of us working from home, schools temporarily closed and homeschooling. A lot of families now appreciate teachers much more than they did. We've got personal air travel and vehicle travel dramatically reduced. Sadly, waves of redundancies and possibly more to come. Business impacted and so on. Supply chains disrupted. But what we've seen, again trying to be a bit positive, we've seen with the reduction in travel an improvement on air quality. And we've seen that people can be as productive working from home. In fact, I know some very large enterprises that have found that they've been more productive working from home. And company directors, I've got tight for time here. I'm going to leave you to read some of that. But you can see that large enterprises are investing now in renewables because, frankly, there's a dollar in it. But also for the sake of Australia, for the sake of our children, we want to save species and save the country for a better future. So what are some of the things that we can do? We can follow the lead of global tech companies and allow people to work from home in hybrid or full-time arrangements with all of the benefits of work-life balance, reduced stress on infrastructure, particularly roads and so on. We can enable the move to rural, regional or outer urban settings, which reduces the need for freeways and the stresses of long commute times. We can regenerate local areas with decentralised populations, and that's been happening a lot. It's suburban or regional, and that helps to generate a sense of local community that happened during the pandemic. We can normalise working, meeting and conferencing. Look at what we're doing here. Why can't we do it in further years, even if we're allowed to get together? We would dramatically reduce travel. I think from Dr. Fiona Kerr's presentation, we can see we wouldn't want to stop human interaction altogether and go virtual, but there's plenty of opportunities for us to work in a virtual fashion and still be as productive. And we can follow the EU's Green Deal, where they've got a multifaceted approach to reducing greenhouse. Some of the practical measures that we could think to put in place, and this is taking it to the personal, and Hilary finished on this in her presentation, really commit to doing what we know matters in our personal lives. Reduce consumption. We don't need all that stuff. Reuse, recycle. These are pretty old messages, but they're still very current. Make your consumer actions count. If you can afford it, install solar. If you're doing a renovation, make it energy efficient. Buy an electric car. We did during COVID. It's been absolutely fantastic, but the government does need to put more infrastructure in place for longer trips. Avoid consumerist obsessions and so on. I'll leave you to read some of that. Join local community initiatives such as sharing produce and goods no longer needed. There's lots of online communities that are doing this, preserving green spaces, supporting those in need. Invest ethically and make sure your super fund does as well, your bank or your company. And they're attuned to this now, these large enterprises. Consider the impact of a move from fossil fuels to renewable on those employed in increasingly obsolete industries. So in other words, we actually have to think about retraining and making sure that we don't leave people behind because, there's a human cost to that, but also that's where a lot of the obstruction is likely to come from if people feel that their lives are going to be dramatically reduced in terms of their capacity to earn an income. And take citizen action. Join interest groups, note the Business Council, the National Farmers Federation, medical fraternities, lobby locally for national action. For example, the ACT has electric vehicles, but lobby for decarbonised transport wherever you are. These things can happen. There's plenty of cities in America and elsewhere that are doing it. And don't support companies or parties who disregard our climate emergency. We are moving, sadly, in a direction that puts us into a bit of a billabong rather than a straight path forward. I encourage everybody to just to take their small part of action. And who better to finish with than David Attenborough, who at 94 is still advocating that we respect the planet and all of its species, not just the human species. The truth is the natural world is changing and we're changing. We're totally dependent on that world. It provides our food, water and air. It's the most precious thing we have and we need to defend it. It's surely our responsibility to do everything within our power to create a planet that provides a home, not just for ourselves, but for all life on Earth. Thank you for that. And I'm going to move immediately to Jo Dodds, the president of the Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action. And she will take us, I think, more directly to impact on the ground. Thanks for that.
Thank you so much, Susan. The introduction. I'm coming to you today from Yuin country with the Dirangunj people have cared for this land for around 80,000 years and never ceded their relationship with this land. So experts today have been giving you the undeniable science around climate change and global warming, and they've had an ask for you as well, for you to act. And some of you might have started making a plan about what you might do to help reduce your greenhouse gas emissions, recycling, composting. Perhaps you'll install another solar panel or dust off your bicycle, which is something I've done. Perhaps you'll contact your super provider with a question about their investment in fossil fuels. And I have to say, I'm coming to you today from my fully solar-powered house on my solar-powered internet, and I hope that it's running smoothly. But 2020 has sucked, hasn't it? So I'm sure that some of you are feeling overwhelmed by the tasks that you've got waiting for you at home and on your desk, to-do lists, shopping lists, emails to deal with, Christmas cards to write, bills to pay. It's a lot, and we're all busy. So adding yet another task to that list might just have to take a back seat, right? But sometimes, this is my story that I'm here to tell you, sometimes something happens that just stops us in our tracks, that puts our plans on hold, that changes how we value things and the direction of our lives. And this something happened to me on March the 18th, 2018. I hope my story is worth listening to, and it is quite personal, because I want to take you into what climate change feels like, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it smells like. And I also suggest that if you might find that traumatic and some of the images I show traumatic, that possibly you should tune out or turn the sound down or go and make a cup of tea if it's getting a bit much. So on that day, March the 18th, I was returning from a local government conference in Gundagai with a colleague, Sharon. It was a long drive and we had a lot to discuss. We talked about the conference, about women in government, about our families, our colleagues, about our plans for the week ahead. What we didn't talk about at the conference, or before or after, was climate change. This should have been a topic that I'd raise because I'd been aware of climate change for at least 15 years, and I'd been working as a volunteer with Clean Energy for Eternity, which is a community group who are interested in renewable energy, and I'd been doing that for about 12 years. But since getting into local government, I'd realised that talking about climate change in political circles meant trouble, and I was busy enough, right? So I stayed quiet during those first two huge years as a councillor because I didn't want to get targeted and I didn't think the problem was as urgent as my emails. Sharon and I drove into Cooma and then began the descent down Brown Mountain. It looked like a lovely autumn day. I don't want the video on yet if that's just happened. I'll start again, sorry. Sharon and I drove into Cooma and then began the descent down Brown Mountain, and it looked like a lovely autumn day. And indeed, the sky was a brilliant blue, but the wind was feral. And as we descended into the valley, which was still looking green after a damp summer, we noticed the temperature outside was rising wildly. In the distance, between us and the ocean, plumes of smoke were rising. Sharon checked the fires near me at and called her brother, who's in the emergency services. While I drove, curious but not alarmed, Sharon read out to me some of the locations that were on fire. When she mentioned Reedy Swamp, I asked for more details. Reedy Swamp was on fire because the power lines had ignited the bush beneath them. The fire was travelling eastwards, driven by the same ferocious winds that were buffeting the car. Sharon then read out the name of my road. My road. I called my partner, Tony, who built our little mud brick house in the forest by hand over 20 long years. He's one of those people who can fix anything and build anything. He was onto the fire situation. But I could hear a tremor in his voice that I'd never heard before. And I realised that this shit was officially real. Sharon read out the house numbers along my road, and each one took the fire a step closer to my home. She dropped me in Tartha, where the Bega River flows out to the sea. At the riverside car park, Tony and I stood for the next 4 hours watching the fire grow towards our place. People gathered. Locals, tourists, children, elderly people. The adrenaline was phenomenal. We checked our phones. We texted family saying, "We're safe. We'll call you when it's over. Don't know about the house." The smoke became a great wall, thickening and widening. It was so many beautiful colours, dense grey, cloud white, lit with pink and orange from within. This was the forest burning. At intervals, sudden columns of black smoke just rose up, and each black column was the end of a car, a shed, or a home. The columns marched slowly towards us like the giant footfalls of some extraordinary beast, and I counted those that rose from my road. These were my neighbours' homes, neighbours I could only hope had escaped in time. The wind was a blowtorch, so hot and dry that it felt like it was blowing from hell. We heard gas cylinders exploding in Tartha. A string of cars appeared out of the smoke and crossed the bridge. I saw a four-wheel drive so packed with people that they were pressed to the windows. Close behind, another vehicle towed a large open boat, and in the boat sat many people, their faces slack with horror and shock. I had the ridiculous thought, "Well, that's a bit dangerous for the kids." And then I realised that these people were fleeing from a greater danger back behind the smoke, something so awful they were prepared to put their kids at this risk. And the horror of what all refugees go through was suddenly there in my town, and these refugees were my community. And all the while we could see our little home nestled in a clearing a kilometre upstream. And I'll just put the video on now if we could. And, if you're not happy about watching this, please tune out. The wind caused the river to rise in waves which chopped against the riverbank. It dragged tears from my eyes. My clothes whipped like sails. I kept finding my hand over my mouth. I paced. I breathed. I watched my little home, inside, everything I own. No time to go back now for all the things that were left behind. I thought of my journals. I've been writing in them for 40 years. They've made me a writer, the thing I most aspire to be. They are the stories, the record of my life, of my friends and family, all the things we've endured and struggled with, all the reckoning and resolution I've sweated on. All I could think is, I've worked out so much of my shit in those books. If they burn, what do I do then? Start from scratch? And I thought of all the other history, my great-grandmother's clock, the gold and ruby ring that belonged to my grandma, my mother's last letter to me, the photos, the poetry, the letters and recipes and tea sets and buttons and the favourite dress, the stories and shoes and pot plants and rugs and books and journals, again, the journals. In the end, we were lucky. As the fire reached our property and the heat and anxiety were at their maximum, the forecasted cool change arrived. But 69 homes were lost. The homes of my friends, Jan, Evan and John, Lise, Yanni, Robin and Julian, Lisa and Matt, Deb and Ingrid, David and Nairi, Jenny and Steve. We lost track of which friends had lost their homes. There were just too many. The toll on health, particularly mental health, was huge and will be for decades. And even though we live near one of the most beautiful beaches in the world, hot days now don't mean swimming like they used to. They actually mean fire to us. On March the 19th, 2018, I rewrote my to-do list and started taking action and talking about climate change, about who was getting hurt and what we needed to do to stop this happening to more communities. And by this date, today, 1 year ago, the Black Summer fires had begun and my community lost another 470 homes and 3 people died. If I can bring you one message today from that grim place where I stood and watched, it's this. Do not wait until the fire is at your door before you do something to bring change. Bushfires don't only happen to rural communities. There are suburbs in Melbourne and Adelaide and Sydney that are increasingly dangerous as bushfire weather increases the risks. And as emergency experts have warned, the coming fires will be too hot and too unpredictable to fight. But there is hope. So the narrative is changing, as we've just heard from Susan. And if we all take some small steps right now, we will change the direction of our world. If we stop now, change will slow down. So I'm going to reiterate some of those things quickly. Make sure your money isn't working in ways that may cause your house to burn down. Ask your super provider about their investments in fossil fuels. Check out the Market Forces website for more info on the best options. If you've got shares, find out where they're invested, and if it's in fossil fuels or companies that support them, move them. 2, influence the decision makers. Write to your local member. Request a meeting to discuss your concerns. And if you see a politician or a business doing the right thing, let them know too, and let your friends know. And the third thing, which for me in some ways is the most effective and why I'm talking to you today, is please support the groups that are taking meaningful action on climate. If that's Bushfire Survivors for Climate Action, that's us. You can find our website and become a supporter there, or any of the other great groups that who might align with your take on this situation. We run on a shoestring, and yet we're now taking the New South Wales EPA to court to hold them to their remit to protect our environment. So we're small, but we are kicking goals and doing big things. So support the people who are taking action. Take your own action, because lowering your own emissions won't be enough to get us over the mark. Really appreciate you listening today and sitting through what is in many ways a very terrible story, and we've seen so much of it in this year and the past 3 years that I feel very conflicted about bringing it to people again. But here we are. We need to do something, and that's my call to you. So thank you very much for listening, and if anyone has questions, go for it.